Alrighty, we are live. Hey there, Laker fans. Welcome to another episode of Lakers Detailed. I am your host, Vinay, with my co-host, Raj. Raj, we are 24 hours post letdown, game one letdown, a little bit of hope, and then hope gets snatched away from us in the second half of the letdown in game one in Denver for the Lakers. The Lakers are down 0-1. There's been a lot of talk. Lots and lots of talk in these past 24 hours about who's responsible for what and what is the expectation and people being very upset. And, you know, it's all expected. It's playoffs, so everybody would expect to be that way. We're going to talk a little bit about game one. We'll talk about game two adjustments. And I want to hit, we're going to hit the questions from the Discord. So if anybody does have questions that joins the live stream, you can always send it via Twitter or YouTube. Or if you're in the Discord, you can add folks in the Discord. You can send your questions, and we'll make sure to feature it on here. But Raj, Lakers lose game one in annoying fashion, I would like to say. A lot of blaming and stuff going around. Where are you at 24 hours later after that game?
It's funny because when after every Laker game, I usually go right into the rewatch. I do a post-game show either with you or on the lounge, and then I'll jump right into the film. Last night, I did not do that. I decided to enjoy whatever was left of my night and kind of forget about that. No, that was tough. I mean, I think we both kind of agreed that game one was kind of a must-have if you were going to kind of do anything in this series. And honestly, that first half went as planned, as whatever good process that I thought we should have had, I thought we did. And it's kind of tough for me, for a guy I know I'm higher on D'Lo than you and most, and it's like everyone who's kind of warns you of a storm that's coming, you're like, it's sunny, what are you talking about? There's no clouds in the sky, what do you mean? You're like, there's a storm coming. Well, that storm hit, and boy did it thunder and did it rain, and were there tornadoes, and was I in the house like trying to protect myself? So we'll get into that, but it sucks, because I guess if you take out the context of losing to Denver 8 straight times, game one is actually not terrible. Like, you look at the numbers, you look at who played well, who didn't, our stars came through, what you were able to hold Jamal Murray to. It's just, but I guess for me, that's what I want to ask you, is the context of adding the 8 straight losses and how last year went, and then pouring that flame onto the game one loss. That's where I think most fans are kind of in this mode where they're now watching OKC Pels and going, maybe we should have tanked that game. I'm not there. Like, I disagree with that, but that's at least the discourse that I see online. So that's where I'm kind of standing right now. I know a lot of people have gone into the game two adjustments. I haven't really posted much film from game one because I just didn't find something that emotionally I was ready to kind of speak on, but I guess where are you sitting at with it? That's where I'm at. I feel like I've seen this movie before, and like the movie's following the same script. I'm like, oh shoot, this is where that lead actor does this shit. Like you know, like I feel like I've seen this movie before. Where are you at with it? Where are you sitting?
Yeah, for me, it's just like I think we've kind of openly said it, and I think I've openly said it, like Denver is the best execution team in the NBA. They're going to execute their basketball for 48 minutes, and very rarely are they not going to be executing what it is they're good at. Whether we want to call it freestyle offense or organized offense, they're going to run what they run. And they run it the same every single time up until it doesn't work. And I thought in order for the Lakers to win any games in this series, they have to be able to out-execute them. Like, we're not going to get a game where, like, everybody on the Denver team shoots like garbage and they're just throwing the ball away every single possession. And I don't think we're going to get a game like that from Denver, because Denver, they're just too good of an execution team. And I thought the first half of the game yesterday, even though we only had a 3-point lead, I thought we played great, great basketball for like large portions of that first half, if not all of that first half. And I thought that was a good sign. I thought the game plan was great. I was watching this game with a bunch of buddies, and like, I saw Gabe Vincent come into the game, and I saw him pick up Jamal Murray, and I was just like, oh, he's not leaving Jamal. He's not taking switches. None of that. I was like, oh, me and Raj talked about this. We're like, oh, the hand is using guys like the way that we expect them to be used. Rui started off on Jokic. Rui's battling like a mother effer, you know, like on the glass against with you. He's going to give up shots, but he's battling for rebounds. He's doing stuff to keep, to give the Lakers a chance. I thought it was really great. And then the second half happened, and I don't know what happened, Raj. Like, it was, I mean, I know I have an idea what happened, but it's just like they came out so flat.
Yeah.
And it felt like all the fighting and the aggression and the physicalness and the we're not going to let you do what you want to do in the first half disappeared in the second half. Yeah. And Denver just went back to doing what they do, which is executing at a high level, and we couldn't keep up.
I don't know how you watch that game, put like within a public setting, because I feel like that was just hell to watch, and I don't know how you watch that in a public setting. But I think just rewatching that game was lost in the final 6 minutes of the second quarter.
Yeah,
to me. So we go up 12, like six. I think it's like 6 minutes to go. And Denver calls a timeout. Right. I think this is LeBron gets the steal. Vinay. Decides not to tomahawk dunk because I think Denver's just fouling hard as shit and just didn't want to do that. So he goes and lays it in. And then coming out of that, Denver responds with a 10-0 run.
Yep.
And really just takes recharge. And I think that was demoralizing. And I think that's another part of this that the Lakers are fighting. There's this war, this mental war when a team has you in a stranglehold for this long. Right. And so that's what I thought, at least just before we even get into the deep basketball kind of analysis of what went wrong. I think that mental war was lost as well. Like, I feel like LeBron and AD came out trying to punch very early, and they did. They threw a haymaker. Denver was wobbled, and then Denver got up from the mat and knocked him right back. And I feel like just in that, do you agree with that? I think the game was lost in that second quarter. I know LeBron hit the three from like half court to put us up three, but I remember going to the halftime and I just did not feel good. I felt like we worked so hard and you got zero fruit of that labor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like you got zero, you got nothing out of a first half that you really put all into. Jamal Murray was pretty much non-existent the first half. Yeah. KCP was scoreless that first half. And what do you do with that, Vinay? Like what, like Denver being able to kind of erase your advantages that quickly? It's no team can play perfect for you know four straight quarters. That's a part I think we're battling here, and I don't really know how to solve that. But I guess like talk to me about that idea, I guess, of Denver having us mentally, and that's a really dangerous place to be at with a team as good as Denver.
Yeah, you know that's a great way to put it. Do you before I answer the question, do you think that starts with the star players? Do you think the star players start going on their heels when that happens? Because I think that dictates a lot of because I think I see when I see it from those guys, like if I see like Bron and AD just kind of like, you know, I'm not going to really try to force it here, or like you kind of get kicking, you know, they feel like they're not getting calls, or they're not getting back on defense, or you know, they're not rotating correctly and stuff like that. When stuff like that starts to happen, I feel like the role players feed off of that. I'm not saying it's just the star's fault, but when you see your star players do it, it kind of affects it. So before I think that's the way I would think of it. Do you think that's the case? Do you think when Denver goes on a run, do you think AD and LeBron, when they kind of get put on their heels, they start, you know, kind of like,
Yeah, it's so fascinating because Denver's one of the few teams, and like they might be the only team, Vinay, that – they attack our best defensive player. Just take AD's name out of it directly. Yeah. You know, like when they're going on their run, Jokic is not screening to get AD off of him. Like he's going right through his chest. And there's something about that that just not only takes AD back, but takes the whole team back. There was a point I thought in the second half, we'll get into this, where I think Denver punched and I thought LeBron more so than AD kind of made a decision to – like, I'm not – like, I dipped in my tank this game, and this is what I pulled out. I'm not dipping in that tank again. Look, and I'm not blaming him for that. Like, I think there's a managing that has to be done even at this stage of the playoffs. But and I think this coincides with your point of when we're on our heels and, like, Denver punched and they got it, whatever, they tied the game. But then in the third quarter, MPJ goes on his run, right? MPJ goes on a solo, like – I forgot what it was. He scored like 10 points in third quarter, whatever it was. I think LeBron decided, look, I'm not dipping into that tank again. I'm not attacking the rim ferociously against Jokic and Aaron Gordon to that point. I thought AD tried, at least there were points where I thought AD let the refs get in his head, but Denver definitely has something there, something about Jokic and Jamal Murray, and KCP gets just this shot of injection of just fired up shooting whenever he plays us. I'm not sure it's on. I think there was something also about watching D'Lo just tank in front of them. Like, you could see LeBron's demeanor just continue to get more and more pissed off as D'Lo continued to just fire up jump shots. And there's something about that, like, he doesn't lose engagement in the game, Vinay, but there's something about, like, oh, D'Lo doesn't have it. Like, you know, we are not stopping this team tonight. So there's something with that. I don't know how you fix that, though. Like, I hope D'Lo plays better next year.
Honestly, Raj, there is no fixing that. If you're star, I'm not saying he did it, but, and I don't think you're saying that he did. You're just saying if that is the situation that's happening, I don't think you can do anything about that. Like, that entire season, if LeBron doesn't want to do something, he's not going to do it. And that's just been the way it is. We've openly asked the question on this pod multiple times. Does Darvin Ham have the capacity or the audacity, I think is a better word to use, the audacity to tell LeBron, yo, what's going on, dude? Like, this lineup, they don't have a rim protector, but you don't want to go to the rim. How is that going to work? Like, in the first half, he's doing it. Like, in the first, he did against New Orleans for two games in a row when they run that bench group lineup with AD off the floor. And it's basically a spaced out floor for LeBron. And like, D'Lo is like the off ball, the additional ball handler or whatever. Like, Bron was attacking early in transition and stuff like that. But we also talked about before this, when we did the series preview, Denver will play Aaron Gordon on LeBron the entire game if they have to. They are fine with that matchup and how that matchup ends up in the long run, because they think Aaron Gordon's going to wear him down. Aaron Gordon played all 12 minutes of the third quarter. So if that was going to be – like, we've seen Bron kind of pick it up in the third quarters for the Lakers at times. If that's going to be a Bron quarter, then Aaron Gordon's going to be on him, or somebody's going to be on him in that manner. And but you can't tell. Like, if that's what Bron's going to do, that's what Bron's going to do. We've also openly asked the question, Raj, like – when Bron decides to, you know, adjust his mode, attacking mode versus facilitating mode, Darvin Ham has no idea how to navigate that because he doesn't know when that's happening. Like, there's no, like, he's running the lineup thinking that one thing is going to happen, but then when that one thing isn't happening, then there's no adjustment to that, because the adjustment would be put somebody else in the game instead of the star player that doesn't want to do what he's doing. And so I think that, you know, we kind of ran into a little bit of that. You know, if Bron's not attacking the rim against smaller lineups, that kind of hurts the Lakers a lot, because they don't really have a rim attacker like that. They're like, so D'Lo's going to start chucking the ball. That doesn't mean D'Lo should keep chucking the ball, but, like, you can see how one thing can roll into the other. There's a domino effect.
And, like, I thought first half our process was really good. I think LeBron trucking at Aaron Gordon all game, I think that's the wrong approach. Like, we just watched, we were talking about before we got on, but we just watched Pelicans OKC. Yeah. And Brandon Ingram just trying to go through the Dort wall. I think they call it the Dortcher Chamber in Oklahoma City. Yeah. But Brandon Ingram just trying to go through the Dort wall every time. That's just the wrong process to me. I think that's like kind of a misunderstanding of how to attack an NBA defense. And I think the same with LeBron just trucking. What we were doing, though, Vinay, which I was confused why we switched up before Denver really understood how to stop it, was we were kind of putting Jamal Murray in every action, and like, we were screening Jamal's man to kind of bring him up, and they were blitzing LeBron at the top, and we were kind of playing out of that in the 4-on-3 and getting good looks out of it. LeBron was getting to the rim. We talk about this all throughout the year that we don't really run the LeBron AD pick and roll much, because most teams switch. They don't switch. Denver does not switch that. They don't want to switch Jokic on a LeBron. So that's an action that you can really get the use out of, really. And I thought we went away from that. It's a little like under noted detail that I haven't seen online, but AD screens got worse and worse as the game went on. So like, he didn't screen Aaron Gordon off LeBron well enough, which is something that I think is a key part of this as well. Like, AD's got to set those hard. But yeah, in the second half, I felt like we just really went down, and I don't know if we want to get to this now. Your starting guard, Vinay, goes 6-for-20 on shots.
We should discuss it, because that's really the next place that I want to go. Yeah. Like, we have to discuss what this thing is.
It's just like, I can't get like, look, I think last year was, I said this a lot of times. I think last year was our stars weren't good enough. Like, in my opinion, yeah. Our stars were not good enough, which again, there was a multitude of factors, injuries, whatever you want to say. They just weren't, the result was what the result was. I just have a hard time going on watching the shots D'Lo took. None of them were off of good process. You know what I mean? Like, I could live with D'Lo missing 14 shots if it's LeBron creates, they attack, swing, D'Lo misses open corner three. All right, you got good process, good results. You got good process, just terrible results. That's not what last night was. Last night was, we talked about the possession game. I think Denver took 20 more shots than us.
Yeah.
I would argue 15 of those shots we took were D'Lo's just terrible offensive possessions.
Yeah.
So you do the math game there. But yeah, talk to me about D'Lo's night. And before we get into what he can do the rest of the series, just last night in terms of its implications on the game, how big a piece of the pie, blame pie you put that on.
Yeah, you know, it was good to see him aggressive, but I thought he missed a ton of shots that he normally would have made. And I don't know if it was like the stickiness of KCP staying with him. I mean, the threes, you know, he had a post-game comment, Raj, where he just said, those are good threes for me. I just didn't knock them down, which it's fair. Like, they're open threes. Like, there were some. I was like, I don't know if we need to take this. But there were plays where he got the screen and he was getting – like, he had a shot at the rim. But because he's not a guy who typically takes shots at the rim, like, he doesn't uses a basket. Soft floater, yep, and stuff like that. He wants to use floaters and whatnot. Those shots are much harder to come by when you have a true seven-footer on the floor, and then you have Aaron Gordon also standing around in the paint too as well. And this is not – I think you put it really, really nicely. You cannot beat force with finesse. And this is – D'Lo is not going to win this with finesse. The soft touch stuff, all that stuff is not going to work. You either got to start making threes or you've got to draw fouls, which he's not going to get them against Denver. He's not going to get the low pickup dribble fouls. This is the NBA playoffs. Like, for the folks that are tuning in right after the OKC Pels game, like, Shea was getting automatic fouls. Like, he was getting like 10 to 12 free throws a game. You watch this game today against the Pelicans, who were shorthanded without Zion. He's not getting those calls. Like, the refs are letting him play. So the finesse guys have to learn how to either play in open space or whatever. Sorry, but the reason why I'm saying all this is because D'Lo has to, like, there's something has to change in terms of, like, the way he's trying to score. I mean, it is as simple as, hey, you got to make your open shots. Like, that's also very fair. Like, I'm looking at that stretch. Like, you mentioned that 6-minute stretch or whatever in the second quarter where they kind of gained the momentum back. Like, Jamal Murray was 0-for-4, but D'Lo was 0-for-4 in that stretch too as well. And that, you know, we know that we're not really feeding D'Lo a bunch of contested shots. We're usually trying to get him open shots because he can knock him down. So it's just like, okay, so this is where I'm at, Raj, with this D'Lo conversation. If you're not going to get, okay, first and foremost, he shot a lot, okay? He shot a ton. And I don't know if he should be shooting that much when he's not on. I understand him also shooting a lot because of what we just talked about. LeBron in the second half was like, I'm not going to do too much work in the second half. So I understand maybe that was the reason why he shot a little bit more than he did. I think some of those shots should probably go to Rui. I think Rui only took one shot, I want to say, like in the third quarter altogether or something like that.
Took four shots, Vinay. Whole game.
Rui took four shots. Austin Reeves also didn't shoot the ball. Like, he did play amazing, but he didn't shoot the ball very well. Austin was on Jamal also, like on the defensive end.
He did
a really good job, I thought, on Jamal, just staying with him and battling as best as he could. So I'm not too mad about him not getting too many shots. But if that is the result that we're going to get with D'Lo taking that many shots, or D'Lo being the alternate attacker next to LeBron, and he can't do better than that, that's going to be a problem. I think there's a valid question, and I'll bring it up from the Discord because I think it just kind of nestles directly into it. That one of the questions that we had was from D3 Dame in the Discord, and his question was, will we benefit from starting Gabe over D'Lo or Austin Reeves? I don't know if you benefit by starting Gabe over Austin Reeves, but I think they are going to take a look at if D'Lo. I think D'Lo's going to have a shorter leash for game two.
Sure.
And if he starts off rough, I wouldn't be shocked if Gabe or Spencer comes in for him. No, not start. I think that I don't think they'll bench D'Lo yet.
Right.
But I think they'll pull him. They'll pull him early if he has issues in game two. Is that a fair way of thinking about what is going on with him.
Yeah.
And what we expect out of him.
So I said this a lot of times. I think there's a difference between, because they're obviously being very touchy with D'Lo, right? Like, we benched Rui Hachimura last game in the fourth quarter. Not a single conversation about it. Not a single post. No one cares. They just trust Rui will take it on the chin and play well next game, right? Which is very funny. It was very interesting. I don't understand where the political kind of machinations come from. But yeah. The difference to me of, like, you can bench a player without embarrassing the player, right? I think there's a line there. Like, B.I. was kind of benching the playing game in the fourth quarter. But it's a little bit more B.I. is not playing well. I don't think you can win this series without D'Angelo Russell. I just don't think there's enough offensive talent. Like, I think you need D'Lo to at least be productive in some matter. My issue with that game, Vinay, was D'Lo didn't need 41 minutes. Like,
fair.
Right? Like, and Darvin spoke post-game as well. He said, I like the shots that D'Lo was getting. Like, we want him to be aggressive. That's fine on a Wednesday night in March. Right? Yeah. Like, I totally fair. Let D'Lo cook and see if he has it. This is not that. These are do-or-die games. Like, yeah. Game 2, in my opinion, should be a game 7. There needs to be a little bit more urgency, right? D'Lo can't let, like, with D'Lo, like, he was 3-for-5 in the first quarter. I tweeted out that matched his Western Conference final average from last season. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I thought he was on a positive manner. When he goes 2-for-11 in the second and third quarters combined, right?
Yeah.
Like, D'Lo's a guy, you let success be your guide. You know, like that, like in that manner, right? Success should be your guide. The reason Rui got 4 shots is D'Lo comes up, runs one little pick and roll, fires up a 3. Austin, right, gets 9 shots. And I think some of that is the attrition of guarding Jamal Murray. But there was just not enough, spacing out the offensive touches that this team has been really good about. Usually the guy that's hot gets 20 shots. Or, you know, like, usually there's like a process of understanding when a guy is going. It felt like D'Lo was playing one-on-one. It was kind of like, this is my redemption series. Like, fuck the scoreboard. You know what I mean? When I rewatched the game, that's kind of how I pictured it. It was D'Lo, like, a no scoreboard type game where he's just playing one-on-one in like my career mode. Like, let me just get one. It's very strange. And Darvin and whoever you want to put blame or credit to, whatever, however you want to word this, promoting that. Like, we had a play, Vinay. We cut the lead to 7 in the fourth quarter.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to talk about. Go for it. Yeah.
Right?
I know what moment you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. We cut the lead to 7 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, LeBron, AD going to the bench talking. Like, we watched the game on playback, so there's no commercials. It just shows right to the bench. And so it shows, like, you know, everyone's diagramming whatever they're going to run out of timeout. Yeah. We got out of timeout. LeBron jogs to the corner. And so I'm like, all right, like, probably LeBron coming up off a DHO in the corner. D'Lo gets 2 screens, one on the left, one on the right side. He comes off. Then he tries to foul bait a 3 on Jamal Murray, right? And then obviously doesn't get the call. It's like, not even close. Jamal Murray's closer to blocking it than fouling him. Yeah. And then Nuggets go on the other end, and MPJ hits a 3. And it's like, there's no way that's what it was called. There's no way out. One more play for D'Lo. First play of the second half, Vinay. We're up 3. We have the ball because we lost the tip to start the game. First play, D'Lo gets an Aaron Gordon switch. Maybe the best defender on the Nuggets,
right?
You could argue. And takes a pull-up mid-range jumper contested over Aaron Gordon. And then Nuggets score on the other end. I'm just like, there's no way that's what it was called. There's no way that was a process. And I hate blaming one player. Like, I don't do that. It's not the way I analyze the game. It's just, I don't know how you come away from that game thinking anything else. But no, take that wherever you want. Cause that was my little D'Lo kind of soliloquy there. I don't know what you like. It's hard to look at the box score and go anywhere else. And please don't tweet me that D'Lo was a +2. Like, please don't in 41 minutes. Like, please, I'm begging you, please don't.
Okay. So I that fourth quarter was the one that was like, I was like really, really pissed because there was AD went on a run against Jokic where they were just playing each other one-on-one basically. Yes. And AD was getting the best of Jokic. And AD had a play where like Jokic spun off of him. AD recovered and still blocked the shot out of bounds. AD hit a nice turnaround. He hit a couple nice turnaround, like kind of shots. Like, it was nice because AD had kind of played annoyingly up until that point. He was taking threes, which I understand he has to take some of those. But, like, he was doing this thing where he kept running into Joker and bouncing off of him and trying to, like, draw a foul call. And I was just like, dude, they're not going to give you those calls. Just take the shot. Like, don't try to draw the foul. They're not going to call it on Joker. Like, just accept that they're not going to call it. Like, that's just what it is, whether it's a foul or not. And so I thought that was what it was. But AD did well in the fourth quarter. Like, when the Lakers could have folded, when I think they went up double digits, Denver went up double digits.
Sure.
AD kind of helped us claw back. We got as close as 6 points, I want to say, at one point. And that play happened, the D'Lo shot. And it's funny. So I was at a birthday party, and we were all watching individually on our phones, watching the game on our phones. And then for the fourth quarter, the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, we all went in my buddy's house, and we watched the game together. And boy, can I, like, the amount of groaning that happened when he took that shot, when he attempted that shot, especially because we kept chipping away. I think there was like 3 minutes or 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. Like, there's more than enough time to make it a one position game.
It was like 5 minutes left, Vinay. That's a good amount of time left.
Yeah. And we were just like, dude, like, no, like, this is not this reminded me of when we played the Warriors and he took that crazy transition three and he made it. Everybody was just like, wow, like, D'Angelo Russell is an amazing, you know, amazing heat check, blah, 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 amazing shot. And I remember, like, thinking to myself, if he misses that shot, we probably lose that game, like, or it breaks the momentum of that game. And that shot last night is what that felt like. Like, we kept chipping away at the momentum and at the energy. And we were kind of like, you could kind of feel the energy turning in the Lakers' favor. Like, the crowd was kind of quieting down. But then that shot happens, they score the other way, and it just, I don't know, Raj. Like, he is a wild, like, what did we say? We said in the series preview, we don't know what his impact is going to be like. Is he going to have one good quarter and then just kind of play blah like the other three quarters? Or are we going to get a D'Angelo Russell that is consistently making the right decisions and contributing throughout all four quarters? I would say that this last game was probably the first one where he had a good first quarter and was kind of whatever the rest of the game. But my thing is, like, okay, I'll pose you another question. If you're going to give D'Angelo Russell that many shots and feature him like that, and Austin has to take on Jamal Murray, if the alternative is to start a more defensive-minded guy, say Gabe Vincent, so he can guard Jamal Murray and let Austin get those reps, would you be willing to do that in game two?
Are you saying bench Austin for Gabe? Is that what you're saying?
No, bench D'Lo for Gabe.
Oh, for D'Angelo for Gabe. Okay. See, that's where I think you lose D'Lo. Like, right away.
What if it's an early pull? Let's say we Lakers come out. I'll give you a scenario. Lakers come out. Mm-hmm. D'Lo looks a little shaky. Okay. Maybe he makes a shot or two, but you and I know what shaky looks like. Shaky.
100%.
Like, we know what.
So should the team. The team should know. It's been long enough. Yeah.
We know what shaky D'Lo looks like, even if he's making you know, a shot here or there. If he looks shaky to start the game, let's say he gets pulled at like the 4 minute mark, 3-4 minute mark, scores probably like 10-10 or 12-12, 15-12, something like that. You pull in, you play Gabe. Now you let Austin take those reps from him. Mm-hmm. You figure out when to insert in D'Lo, maybe that second bench unit as the off ball guard with Bronco. Mm. Are you willing to do that if you see a shaky start with D'Lo and let Austin take a break and not have to guard Jamal and chase him around all over the place?
Yeah, I think this needs, like, Vinay, this is what pissed me off out yesterday. D'Lo plays 41 minutes, right?
Yeah.
It's not like we don't have, like, I'm seeing in the chat, Dinwiddie was a minus 20. Like, I understand. Like, he did not. He finished a minus 12 in 13 minutes. It's hard for me to really evaluate kind of what he did in that game. But, like, the point with me is the whole point of, let's be freaking real here. Gabe Vincent and Spencer Dinwiddie are D'Angelo Russell insurance. Specifically. Yeah. For this series, the whole point of having those two guards getting a ramp up, right? We brought Gabe Vincent back and said, "Hey, Gabe, you have about a week. Get on that treadmill and get a ramp. Like, you need to be caught up." And I think, to be fair, Vinay, Gabe has caught up as much as he could. His offense still isn't there, but I feel like the defense is on point. That's the whole freaking point of having those two, and you still play D'Lo at his worst moment, 41 minutes. So I think there needs to be a quick sub. This needs to be a Game 7 type rope. You don't have it. And this goes for anybody, not to single out D'Lo. This goes for anybody. You don't have it. You don't feel like guarding. You don't feel like boxing out. You don't feel like tagging. You don't feel like being physical. You don't feel like coming up to par with the intensity that Denver brings. You sit. You are not playing. This is a D'Lo thing, but this is a team-wide thing as well. I 100% think this should be a any, like, the whole, also the balls should be in LeBron's hands. Like, this is not, this is not a, like, I understand Aaron Gordon will pick you up full court and stuff like that, but this is a team that's not switching a whole bunch of their ball screens. It's a team that LeBron can be very precise and attack with precision, and every set there's a mismatch on every single time you play. Like, look how the Clippers played today, right? The Clippers hunted Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. They're still hunting them. Like, they went to their hotel right now and, like, looking out, where's Kyrie and Luka Doncic? Like, probably, bring them up. Right. Like, they're still, like, I don't want to go into that game, but in any case, LeBron should be doing that with Jamal Murray and KCP every single time. You should not be letting them off the hook. Or if not, it should be Jokic. Those three should be involved every time. We don't have time for this egalitarian offense. I'm sorry. Like, that's fun. That's cool. Regular season. Like, let's see who's hot to, like, get LeBron's legs up to this point, which I think we've done as good a job as we could.
Yeah.
But this should be this needs to be a very precise, like, how you attack should be, you should have a lot of precision with your attack with this team. You can't mess around. You can't have an 18-point quarter because we're trying to see if D'Lo is hot for the fourth. That process to me is, even if D'Lo makes half those shots, right? Like, you talked about the Warriors game where he hit that three. I think D'Lo was on fire that game. He had like five or six threes and he took that three.
Yeah.
Fine. Again, the stakes are way less than they are now.
Right.
Than they were at that point. We have mismatches all over. And AD was cooking, right? AD was starting to go at Jokic. He was starting to figure some stuff out. He's like, all right, Jokic is not going to block my shot. He's never going to, you know, contest me in any way. I can get to my spot and finish over him. And I thought AD did his job in that point. No, like, I think the offense needs to be very precise. And if you can bring Gabe in, that's fine. Like, I honestly think Jamal Murray is going to do his thing. I think Jokic is going to do his thing. And the stars have to match that. And they did in game one. I don't think you can waste 15 to 18 shots. Denver's too good offensively, Vinay. They just are. Yeah. So it's a tough way to lose, because I think that game was there for the taking. It's hard to beat a team five times, right? And I feel like like, what I'm saying is, like, you blow a win, that means you got to win four more when you probably should have won one. If that makes sense. But yeah, man, it's rough, and I just don't know where else to point. I guess we'll get into another point here, but. I think LeBron has to hunt Murray and KCP and Jokic pretty much every time he's on the floor.
Yeah, so I wanted to. There's another really great question in the Discord that I think helps bridge some of this conversation for us. And the only thing I want to put on a button on this D'Lo thing is if we're going to be using Austin as, like, the defender guy, like the KCP role essentially against Jamal Murray, and D'Lo is going to be the offensive guy, and D'Lo is not going to be effective as an offensive guy, and we know Austin can potentially be a better offensive guy, then the swap needs to happen. I think one of the questions that we got from the Discord was from Ibuka, Ohio. He was like, is there a middle ground that we can reach with D'Angelo? And I think you and I are kind of both in the same boat, that either he's playing well or he's not playing well. We haven't seen a middle ground with him against Denver specifically. And if that's going to be the case, and Ham is going to give specific roles to guys based on who they're defending, who he has them defending, then if he doesn't start off well, because I don't think he's going to bench D'Lo game two. I think it's still drastic, but I think he'll pull him early in the game if he looks shaky. Then you give those reps to Austin as the ball handler on the floor, and bring in Gabe and have him assigned on Jamal Murray. I'm not worried about the fouls. Like, we have Spencer. We'll throw Max out there, whatever. It's just defend. Just chase this guy around and defend him. That's really what the responsibility is. And so I'm not worried about the guy in that role. But whoever's the other offensive ball handler for the Lakers has to be somebody who's effective, if it's not LeBron. And we know Austin can be that guy.
Can Austin guard Jamal Murray all series and average like 15?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. Dude, Jamal Murray, like, there's just, like, it's the guys that can do that are the best players at that. Because, like, Anthony Edwards will put up 30 a game and guard Devin Booker or Bradley Beal. Like, the guys, we just watched OKC, right?
He's in a different class of athlete too, right, Vinay?
Right. Like, he's just And I was going to say, another good example is the other kid, the one that I like from OKC, Jalen Williams. Like, I watched him. Like, he doesn't carry the same offense flow that Shea does, but Jalen's going to put up 20 to 22 points a night. And more often than not, like, he'll be the guy who's on CJ McCollum. Or when Lou Dort's sitting, he's the one who's on Brandon Ingram. Like, you have to be a certain type of athlete and have a certain type of technical skill defensively to be able to chase these guys. We don't need to pretend like Austin will put effort. like for sure. He'll fight around screens and all that stuff. But he's not the athlete that you need defensively against a guy like Jamal Murray. And I thought he did a great job, honestly.
Just me too.
Staying close to Jamal. Like Jamal missed some shots that he probably normally would make, but I thought Austin staying with him made a difference. So I'm with you. If D'Lo's shaky, you've got to flip that responsibility.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the issue is that like keeping enough offense on the floor while doing that, mm-hmm. right? Like Gabe and Dinwiddie, their offense just like fluctuates to a point where it's kind of the Vando issue from last year, right? It's you wanted Vando chasing Jamal Murray around, but it torpedoes your offense, and like Denver's still gonna get good looks anyway. Yeah. Like so that's a tough part. I think the only pushback, but I think like Austin did this to an extent with the Warriors, right? Like he was guarding Steph Curry and he had Dennis as well to chase him around. But I thought for the most part, Austin was, and he talked about this on, there's so many player pods now. I don't know which one this he spoke about this on, but Austin said like, you know, chasing Steph and trying to score killed my legs for the beginning of the series. And then I kind of got used to it. I got conditioned and kind of got my shot going as that series went on. I think that's just something he's going to have to do. Like Gabe Vincent's not going to play a ton. You could tell by the minute distribution yesterday, played 13 minutes. Dinwiddie also played 13 minutes. That's just like, I think even in winning time, Austin's going to be on Jamal Murray. What I'm disappointed is we still didn't see LeBron on Jamal at all last year. Yeah. I mean, last game, which again, maybe it just the game didn't ask for it because Jamal wasn't really cooking. I think that's a way that we can kind of mitigate some of these issues and get somebody bigger, stronger on Jamal. But no, it's a tough ask. We're taking all these roads, Renee, that like are left turn, right turns to get to the result.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's a road to beating Denver where D'Lo is just not productive. I don't think that road exists. Like no team could have an 18 point a game scorer who shoots 43% from three in the regular season drop off to a drastic rate and still win. You know, like I'm pulling for Gabe and Dinwiddie to get more minutes, but that's kind of to supplement what we have, not to replace. I think it's a tough place to be where you're trying to just replace D'Lo's production, and it's a tough line. Darvin Ham obviously pushes this, I believe, in the player to the extreme amount. Do you have faith that he can flip that? Like I don't know.
Can Ham flip it, or can D'Lo flip it?
Can Ham flip this? Can Ham be like?
So do you think Darvin Ham put, because this was sort of a question, I'll find the person that actually asked the question. Somebody asked a really nice question. The same guy, Ibuka, Ohio. He asked a question, you know, around the idea of, is Ham putting his guys in position to be successful? For D'Lo specifically, do you think Darvin Ham put him in a position to be successful in game one?
It's a funny question because I feel like we ran the same stuff. D'Lo just took it upon himself to like, I think those are, I always say this, D'Lo doesn't get to the line, doesn't get to the free throw line, and doesn't get to the rim. So his shot is going to have high variance just setting out, right? Just his play style. Those pretty one-leg threes, like one-legged fadeaway threes, those are really nice when they're going in. But when they're not, like there needs to be some kind of urgency there. So I don't know if I say Darvin put him in, like I've loved our offense recently. We've had like one of the best offenses since Rui became put in the starting lineup. And I just don't think we leverage that. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure that's on Darvin. And I know we discussed a little bit kind of the play calling stuff, but I don't blame Darvin for that. I think like most coaches, if you speak to them, honestly, they'll be like, yeah, I run plays out of timeouts. First play of the half, first play of the fourth quarter. Yeah. After that, basketball is a flow sport. Like I can't, it's not football. I can't stop the game and run a different play, you know, every single possession. The players kind of have to read and react to a lot of things on the court on the fly. Yeah. But I think D'Lo's gonna do what he does. This doesn't feel like anyone specifically can help D'Angelo Russell. This feels like a D'Angelo Russell versus D'Angelo Russell problem. And he's been losing to himself versus Denver for the last five games. So we'll see in game six.
It'll be interesting. I think he is potentially in danger of losing minutes because he got a lot of minutes in game one, like you mentioned. He has some potential. Dude, I'm telling you, that article that came out against Milwaukee after that Milwaukee thing and him basically saying like, he didn't do that. Okay, you've got a line of communication now. Like, Ham gave you 41 minutes to play and it didn't look good. You're going to get another chance. Not 41 minutes, I don't think, but you're going to get another chance. But I think Ham is going to have a shorter leash Like Ham basically can say, you know what, we gave this a shot. We got to try something a little bit different, but we're not going to cut you out of the rotation completely. Let's pivot here for a second, Raj. I'm talking about individual player performance. AD had the end of game stuff was really, really good. And there were spot moments. There were good moments throughout the game, I would say, where AD was really, really good. Grabbing offensive rebounds, getting putbacks, stuff like that, crashing, you know, the pick and roll stuff, catching alley-oops from Braun,
yeah.
A ton of stuff. But there was a part of it for me personally that was a little annoying, which was he was trying too hard to draw fouls. He would run into guys, allow himself to get off balance, throw the ball up, hit the ground, automatically turns into a 5-on-4 going the other way. The Lakers were very, very fortunate in the first half that some of those shots that they generated out of that 5-on-4 action were misses. Like I would say like Jamal probably missed a couple of threes that, you know, I don't think he's going to miss that next time he sees that shot go up. I think MPJ might have missed a couple, KCP, sorry, might have missed a couple in that case. That is annoying to me. I'm not saying that AD is a bad player or anything, but that thing is annoying because I understand what he's trying to do. He's trying to create the physicality, draw a foul, and what it is. But the thing that always frustrates me as a fan is like when they are not, if you try it like two or three times and they're not calling it, stop. Like, don't. So I'll give you an example. There was a play, I want to say in the second quarter, or might have been the first or the second quarter, where AD basically got an ISO below the free throw line. Sorry, below the three-point line against Jokic. Nobody was coming to help. They just let him play one-on-one. And AD kind of is dribbling the ball around. He very easily can just take a free throw line jumper if he wants, which he has cashed many, many times. He has a lot of confidence in that shot when he gets his feet under him. But for some reason, he decides to dribble into the paint, right directly into Jokic's chest, bounces off Jokic's chest, falls to the left inside block, kind of throws it up. He just kind of throws it up. Like,
I remember
like,
this. You know, play yes.
Not in the air. There's no call.
Side like, of the backboard.
Hey, yeah, if you're a Laker fan, I understand if you were like, hey, that should have been a foul call. But it's just, again, playoff basketball, this is the MVP. Like, they're not going to call. Like, just accept that they're not going to call that call. And that that would have been maybe like the third time, I would say, or the fourth time I saw AD try to attempt something like that. And he just didn't get it. They get a 5-on-4 going the other way. I can't remember if they scored or not going the other way. But that kind of stuff bothers me because it's like, that's just a bad possession. If your goal at the end of this possession was, I want to collide with this guy because either I'm going to get the foul in an N1 or I'm going to miss it because these shots don't look like they're even close to going in when he shoots them after the collision or after the contact is made. Like, I think that's just a bad shot. And I remember I was saying this to my brother and I was just like, dude, just shoot the ball. Just take the open jumper. It's okay. Take the floater, do anything, but just don't do this thing where you're trying to create the contact, hoping to draw the foul to get them in foul trouble because the refs just, they don't award that in the playoffs. That bothers me. But then the fourth quarter, I see him take it up like a normal human, you know, normal guy that you'd expect him to be. And he's making all of them. Am I wrong for feeling that way? That's my question to you. Is that fair to be frustrated with him trying to do something like that?
I think it's fair. I think it's very easy for us here to be like, hey, just run back. And like, there's a human element where I talked about this when we were doing the preview. The Lakers are one of the best teams at drawing fouls. Obviously, NBA Twitter has a way of explaining that in different terms, but we just use the result. The Lakers are one of the best teams at drawing fouls. Vinay Denver is one of the best teams at not fouling, right? Yeah. So it's like this unstoppable force versus this immovable object. No pun on Jokic there, but like that's kind of the two forces that are going at each other. And honestly, like, I can't really complain about the free throw. It was 19-6 in free throws, right? AD had 9 free throws, which again, like, you can go back in the tape and he probably deserved more. Jokic is one of the best at, and like I always talk about, Jokic is not going to block your shot very many times. Like, he's going to be, and he's one of the best at fouling without fouling, if that makes any sense. Like, he's very good at nudging you, pushing you in a way that the referee doesn't. A lot of hip checks,
body checks.
Yeah. A lot of them. And I'm sure AD's like, I was moved very far from where I was, and the ref's like, I mean, the arm's on the other side of the body. I can't even see you. So how do I know? There's stuff like that you got to get used to. But to your point in the fourth quarter, you're right. I think this is you talked about force with D'Lo, and I feel the same about AD. This is not a pretty two crossover spin move pump fake over. Yeah. Jokic's not biting on any of that. So this is
he's just standing still.
He's just standing. Like, he's standing at the basket waiting for you. This is I'm going right through your chest. I'm going through contact. You know, if they call it a foul, great. If not, I'm finishing. There are a couple and ones, but I thought AD should have had, like, he went up a little soft. And again, like, these are like I'm kind of nitpicking here, but no, like, I think this is a game where AD can get to a spot and finish over the top. There's no reason that, you know, you have to rush against Jokic. It's a lot of single coverage, right? They're very much okay with not sending help on AD. They don't double AD in the post. These are games where AD can really go through guys. And I think getting Aaron Gordon in foul trouble was vital for this series. Aaron Gordon picked two up really quickly in the first half. I saw the chat mention he didn't play in the second quarter. I think that's huge, and I don't think it's any coincidence we made our run when Aaron Gordon was on the bench. That's a guy, like, they have no depth behind him, Renee. I'd really like to see us kind of go at him in terms of, like, AD's aggression if he's on switches. But, look, man, like, I got what I wanted. AD shot, 23 times? Like, I think that's important in 44 minutes. That's a lot of minutes for Anthony Davis for what he has to cover defensively. But, like, you want to climb this mountain? It's, like, climbed on the backs of AD and LeBron. And, like, this is just the minute load he's going to have. I don't know if that's sustainable all game, but I think at least, like, just this series, that's what's needed. But I liked his offense, man. I can't really pick on. I understand the foul stuff, and I think he'll learn that as the series goes on, hopefully. Jokic is just a big body as well, and we're putting Rui on him. I think that we should discuss that too next, kind of the defense on Jokic. But I thought AD was fine. I liked his offense. I don't think you're wrong to be mad at the kind of foul baity stuff. It's just like, hopefully they learn this is not a series you can do that with. Denver's too good, too disciplined defensively to give that up. And you won the free throw advantage 19-6. You can't really complain about the fouls, I guess, right? Like, there's, like, I can't go into that. I can't blame the refs for the loss, I guess. But where are you at with that?
Yeah, no, I don't really hang anything on the refs, honestly. I don't think that game was as referee. Like, the only ones that were annoying, the only rough things that were annoying, I think I tweeted about it, was DeAndre Jordan drawing a shooting foul when trying to do, like, a 360 layup or something like that because he got turned around on a drive on Andy Druid on AD. And I was just like, he's 2024, bro. Like, why is DeAndre Jordan able to even draw fouls doing that kind of, you know, nonsense or whatever? And I thought the Lakers defense was really good, dude. Like, the assignments are right. Like, they weren't playing Peyton Watson tightly in the first half because he's not really a three-point shooter like that. Like, so when he was, and then he ends up hitting two threes. Yeah, at some point you can't disrespect him, but, like, I understand what they were doing was smart.
28% three-point shooter. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what they were doing is right. But yeah, we should talk about the defensive part, the defensive aspect. So you and I both sort of predicted that they would put Rui, on Jokic. And we took it one step further and said, don't let anybody else score. Make Jokic have to score every single time down the floor. Mm-hmm. Let Rui essentially be the sacrificial lamb. Let him know that this is how we're going to play it. We know you're going to get scored on. Don't worry about it. Like, but this is what we want. And I thought the Lakers kind of did a good job trying to do that. I don't if they kind of did a good job funneling too many shots to Jokic, but I thought they putting Rui on Jokic was a really good thing. Jokic is, very simply put, Jokic is uniquely a problem for any team because he can spread the floor for the team. So for the Lakers, because you don't want Anthony Davis on the perimeter, it makes a ton of sense to keep Rui on him. And either Jokic has to come all the way to the rim where Anthony Davis is going to be waiting for him, or he has to take perimeter shots and stuff like that. So I thought the Lakers did a really good job doing that. It actually worked out pretty good because I felt like the Lakers were generating a lot of turnovers by forcing him to make tight passing windows. I think Bron had a couple deflections. Gabe had a deflection. Like, and it led to runouts. Or if it was a long miss, it would lead to a long outlet pass for an easy bucket. And I thought Lakers scored a few cheap points, but it's the playoffs, so who cares? Like, a couple of easy points that way. Is this team? So I thought the strategy was fine. What did you think of the strategy of keeping Rui on Jokic? And do you think we need to switch that?
So I think you know, Jokic is a guy you just can't give the same pitch to every time, right? He's eventually gonna hitting home runs out of it for the baseball people out there. I liked, like, Rui on. I thought we would go to it, Vinny. I didn't think we'd do it from, like, opening tip. Like, I just did not think Darvin would do that. I didn't know he'd throw Rui on him right away, and I thought it worked. I thought our doubles were timed pretty well. I just thought they got too repetitive, where Jokic kind of understood, all right, they're doubling off the second dribble. And so, you know what I mean? Like, so he started to read kind of the patterns, and Jokic is a really genius basketball player. You're not going to be able to kind of shut him off the whole time. I agree with you, though. I thought that we kind of overextended. Like, we were kind of making Jokic take long twos, and he was hitting them. And, like, I was live, and I was like, just let him take those. It's not punishing your defense. It's not getting anyone else going. Like, you don't overextend to it. If Jokic is hitting long twos, you got to kind of live with those. I think where we got in trouble was it's easy, again, for us to stay here. I just, like, basketball is a very flow sport where if a guy hits three straight shots, your natural inclination is to go and help. Right. And to go and kind of overextend onto that play. And I thought that's where it burned us. They got MPJ going, got KCP going in the third. Jamal Murray started cooking off that. We were kind of playing at the level of the screen and forcing Jamal to hit pocket passes to Jokic. And Jokic was hitting that little free throw line jumper, which, but hey, I'm fine. Like, if Jokic wants to take those all game, go ahead. Right. Like, the other option is you leave a corner shooter open that shoots like 45% from three. I'm totally good with those. I thought we overextended on that. But, like, it's weird because, like, the other times I felt like Jokic and Murray were the reason we lost. Like, I don't come out of this game going the way we defended Jokic is the reason we lost.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think I'm with you there. Right? Yeah.
And maybe we can touch on the Christian Wood coming back in this scenario which is fascinating. But, like, I thought Jokic really killed us on the boards. And that's a place where I think you tweeted as well that, like, Rui was fighting on the glass, and I thought Rui was fighting pretty hard on the boards. But there's places where Rui can have Jokic boxed out, but Jokic might be the best volleyball player in the league. Like, he just volleyballs the basketball to him and touches himself. I think this needs to be game rebounding. I think we have to sandwich rebound, right?
Yeah,
sandwich rebounds, like when a guard comes and helps and backsides and kind of locks in, sandwiches a player in to help for the boards. We can't be leaking out in this series, but I thought the defensive game plan was fine. There were points where AD was on him. And look, Jokic is going to score some of those and get his hook shots in. But AD also won some of those matchups. Like, he blocked him, I think, one time. He deflected in another. Like, I thought the Jokic defense was fine. Jokic is still going to get his gaudy numbers. I think, what did he eventually, I don't know what he finished with. He finished with 32 and 12, right? Those are the numbers that Jokic is going to get. I thought it was fine. What'd you think? Is there any adjustment, I guess, to defending Jokic in game two?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think the idea behind playing Rui on him is fine, because I think the way Jokic likes to play, he doesn't want to exclusively just go into post up every single time he has the ball. You know, he's on the floor and he has Rui on him. He still does want to be, like, around the free throw line. He wants to be in that high post area where he can make, or the elbow where he can make those passes and stuff like that. I think for the sake of, because Rui can stay in front of him, and because Jokic doesn't want to play exclusively as, like, a post-up player, I think it's a good strategy, because it does free up AD from having to, like, AD can be more effective when he's closer to the rim and stuff like that. And again, they're playing Aaron Gordon, who's a non-shooter, so, like, that kind of makes sense, because Aaron Gordon's probably going to be in the dunker spot anyways. So AD can, it works in the Lakers Lakers' favor to run that matchup that way. I've seen people say that you know, it's like AD has to pick up Jokic. I really don't want to do that. And it has nothing to do with AD's ability to guard Jokic. We've discussed the attrition game. I'm actually worried that what's going to happen is AD will take that matchup very seriously, won't allow any switches, and he's going to end up on the perimeter at the three-point line the entire time. And our backside defense is going to get smoked bad. And I don't want him to do that. And so, like, there's no version of this Lakers team right now, unless we're going to play, like, Jackson Hayes and AD at the same time, where I think that's a good idea. Just because schematically, Bron's not going to do it. Bron's not going to protect the rim. Like, he hasn't done it all season. Maybe he does it in the playoffs for a couple plays, but I don't think that's something that he wants to do for the 35 to 40 minutes or whatever that he's going to play in the game. And Aaron Gordon's a pain in the ass. And we've talked about MPJ too as well. Like, Jamal Murray sees green when he sees an open lane. So it's just like they have too many guys that can hurt us if we do that. So I think that strategy is fine.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to add to that point. So Aaron Gordon, Vinay had 11 rebounds. Rui and LeBron combined had 9. Like, it's not enough rebounding. Like, those two guys have to board, have to fight on the glass. Like, the backline defense stuff, for sure. You gotta close out possessions. You give Denver more than one shot, you're effed, right? You're in trouble. So that's where, like, I think that's where it is. I don't want any leakouts. I think unless LeBron's getting the rebound and pushing the basketball, I just don't think you're getting good looks. I haven't liked what D'Lo has done in transition for the last few games now, but, like, at least in this game, this is not a game where I want, you know, those guys leaking out. So this is a game to me where you got to control the possession game, make this a slow paced game. I think where you get in trouble is when you're playing in transition and then Denver's able to push back on you. That's where that's where most of the MPJ buckets came from. Vinay was in transition. He got a lot of like running to the wing three, Jamal Murray, a lot of running to the corner threes. That's stuff you got to take away. And a lot of that is cleaning up the glass. So, but no, I think our forwards have to be more physical in game two. Like, I think you pointed this out. This is all Aaron Gordon's out there to do. Like, he's all out there to do, to be physical and run around and just crash the glass. And that's got to be scouted. And it's tough. That's tough team to kind of to scout that against.
So you mentioned Rui's rebound number. So the way I always think of it in my mind is that Rui's probably boxing out Jokic, or like fighting for his life to box out Jokic. So he might not necessarily be like that. Requires two hands. That's the way I always say it when you have that much of a size mismatch. And he's probably busy trying to box out Jokic. Mm. And so I'm with you. Like, it has to be gang rebounding. Like, if Bron is on MPJ and that shot goes up, Bron does have to come and crash the glass. Like, he can't just be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to get down in transition to score a layup or something like that. Like, that is helpful because Bron is probably our best transition attacker in the paint. But, like, yeah, you do lose those matchups. Like, if it's AD and Rui versus Jokic and Aaron Gordon, I mean, Aaron Gordon is a handful too as well. Like, there was actually a couple of plays, I want to say, in the first half where MPJ and Aaron Gordon crashed the glass. And like, I don't know who it was, but somebody on the Lakers, he was fighting, like one of the guards was like fighting like hell to scrap for the rebound. And I think it was Gabe or somebody. He managed to get the rebound and just kind of get the outlet out so the Lakers could attack early in transition. But like, I was like, that shouldn't be Gabe. It can't be Gabe. Right. Like, we can't rely on, like, at some point, like the stars can't rely on the role players to do all of the dirty work, because Denver's not doing that. Like, Jokic is like, no, I'm going to go. Okay, so the disparity, you know, they grabbed 15 offensive rebounds. Six of those came from Aaron Gordon. Like, you mentioned he had 11 rebounds. He had more offensive rebounds than he did defensive rebounds in the game yesterday. And then Jokic grabbed three offensive rebounds himself. So it's just like, and we'll get to the thing about the play calling stuff. Like, people have been trying to, the nice way I can say is they're trying to galaxy brain the reason why the Lakers offense wasn't good. A big part of the reason why the Lakers lost that game last night, they were throwing the ball away too many times in half court actions, just bad passes. Like, Bron had 7 turnovers. Like, I was going to talk about it, but it's probably just, we'll just lump it all together. He had 7 turnovers. Some of them were just, you know, like him getting called for a moving screen or something, or incidental contact. But like 4 or 5 of those were just bad passes. He's trying to squeeze a pass in a pick and roll to Anthony Davis between Jokic and Aaron Gordon, and they're waiting for the pass. Like, you could literally see them waiting for the slip pass. Another one, he's throwing it cross court against the zone to like Gabe Vincent, which is like way off the angle. It's like, so he throws that away, and then you get the lack of defensive rebounding. Like, that, you lose those two things, you're probably going to lose the game. And you know, I think nothing is more indicative of the fact that they shot 20 more times than we did in that game. You give them that many extra possessions, you're lucky you didn't get blown out by 20 to 25.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's where it is. Aaron Gordon getting 6 offensive rebounds, and then you also throw MPJ getting what, 11 rebounds as well that game. So
he had 8.
8 rebounds. Yeah, sorry. So like, yeah, you have a forward tandem in Denver that's completely disciplined to go for the boards. So I think, like, you're right. Rui's probably boxing out Jokic. That's where like LeBron has to crash. I'm sorry, Austin and D'Lo all have to crash. Just needs to be a 5-on-3, whatever rebounding kind of an advantage that you need to put up. So yeah, I agree with you. Those are places you can kind of clean up, right? To like move the margin for error a little bit higher. But yeah, you give Denver 20 more shots, who's already a better offensive team with you than you, that's a better executing team with you, you're probably gonna lose. Like, that's the silver lining, I guess, Vinay. Like, what I go back and forth with. Again, you take out the context of losing, whatever, 8 in a row to Denver and, you know, 5 straight playoff games. Like, that was a well-played game if you just take out the D'Lo stuff and you look at just the margin, right? If you take out the names of Denver and Lakers on this, you just look at a team that got out-rebounded by 20-plus, that got, you know, 20 less shots, and the game was still in the, like, in the hands, you would take that and say, okay, we have a runway here to, like, improve. It's just the mental kind of capacity to take that challenge on, which we'll see in game 2. But I'm with you, man. There's places to clean up. Denver's, again, a challenging team. I think, you know, KCP had 4 threes in the third, and like, people call that luck or whatever. That's what they do. Like, that's like, those guys just, You know what I mean? Like, there's MPJ will have a quarter like that. You got to take those punches. What you can't do is have 18 points in a quarter. That's where,
yeah,
that's where you lose. That's where you get blown out. Denver's just, offense is just never going to die to that pace. And that's a tough thing to do, but that's where, like, LeBron has to be consistent. Seven turnovers is too high, even with the on-ball possessions he had. D'Lo's nonchalant. Oh, we didn't even talk about that. I forgot what the score was, but D'Lo was coming up and throws a nonchalant just pass that gets picked by KCP. They go down the other end and hit a three. And usually the broadcast doesn't say it in this manner, but they were like, LeBron had a pretty stern conversation with D'Angelo Russell after that play, which, you know, LeBron, like, doesn't, at least the broadcast doesn't bring that up that often. I just, those plays killed us. So we'll see in game two. But, there's a lot of margin here to work with for sure. I agree with you.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if it was D'Lo, but I'm trying to actually pull up the tape for it, but there was actually a play. The reason why that him getting upset at him is really funny is because KCP did the same exact thing to LeBron in the first quarter. Like, the Lakers were up by four in about the 4 minute mark, and they gave LeBron the ball. And for some reason, LeBron decides to throw a deep outlet to the post from half court. And I think that he's trying to throw it to AD, or I couldn't tell who he was trying to throw it to. And KCP picks it off, takes it all the way back for a shot at the rim. And it's just like, just stuff like that. I'm with you. Like that level of execution, it's like, I can't get mad at the coach for you doing stuff like that. Like, you guys have to understand, like, this, the value of the possession. I get it's the first quarter, so it is what it is. But against a team like Denver, where every possession is incredibly valuable, we just watched this OKC New Orleans game, where New Orleans grabbed like three offensive rebounds or four offensive rebounds on a single possession. They're up two, if I'm not mistaken. They're up two, or they're tied or something. No, they're up two. And as soon as they get it, and the clock resets to 14 seconds every time, New Orleans just starts chucking threes within 2 seconds. Like, they don't reset it. They get another offensive rebound, chuck a three. Get another offensive rebound, chuck a three. And I was just like, I'm watching the game, and I'm thinking to myself, it's like, bro, is nobody on the floor realize that you can run more clock? Like, you have the advantage. You have a lead. You have to do that sort of thing. And just like, the reason I'm bringing that up is because we have one of the most highest IQ guys on the floor in Braun, and AD is also a high IQ guy, and D'Lo is supposed to be a high IQ guy. Like, we have to be better with these possessions. We have to be smarter with these possessions. And I know a lot of folks get really upset, and they're like, well, Darvin Ham should call a timeout and he should let them know. It's like, you know, there's a different, you're saying something else when you say that. If Darvin Ham has to micromanage LeBron James and Anthony Davis, then we're having a very, very different conversation about whether we can win this series or not. Because that means that you can't trust your two stars to make the right decisions throughout parts of the game. And that's more problematic than I think people understand when they make that suggestion. But I'm with you. So one of the questions that we did get that I wanted to ask, this comes from Alexis C on the Discord. The question is very, very straightforward. Can the team hit the level of focus, especially on the defensive end, but let's just take it general. Can it hit the level of focus needed to beat the Denver Nuggets?
That's the whole series, in my opinion. Like, the level of focus and attention to detail and the discipline, I think they can. It's just, that's our max vert. Like, that's the, you know what I mean? Like, it's going to take the absolute max. There's no margin for error. I think they could. I think this goes for everyone. This goes for Darvin. This goes for to D'Angelo Russell, to LeBron, to AD. It's not an easy ask. I think they can. Like, I saw enough in game one to say, like, these teams are a little bit more evenly matched than last year, at least. And you have two stars that are healthy that should be playing 40 minutes a game. I think they can. I 100% think they can. I think the D'Lo piece is the swing for me. Like, I feel like I pretty much know what I'll get. I just want to give these, because Rui only shot four times, but these plays, like, kind of stick out to me in a series. So Denver went on like a 10-0 run, Vinay, and game was tied going into the half. Crowd going ballistic, loud as hell in Denver. No one wants anything to do with the basketball. Like, this is including LeBron and AD on the floor. No one wants anything to do. Next thing we get Rui in the corner. He takes a jab step jumper cash, right? And I was like, wow, that showed me a lot. Austin, next possession down. Again, crowd going ballistic. Denver ties the game again. Comes down, takes a mid-range pull-up that rolls in. That's the kind of, like, head toughness and, like, just intensity, ready for the moment type of stuff that I think this team needs. But I think they can. It's just it's the max kind of vert that they'll reach. What do you think? Is that in this squad?
I think that ultimately decides the series. I think if the answer to that question is yes or mostly yes, they can win games and maybe possibly steal the series. But if they can't do that, or they can't do that for 48 minutes of basketball, they're not going to win this series, and they won't win games in this series. I'll take it one step further and say that they won't win a game if they can't do that. Like, Denver is not going to give them any opportunity to just blow a game. They're not going to blow a game against the Lakers. Like,
nope.
If they go up 3-0, they're going to try to kill you in the fourth game. They're not going to be like, you know what? We could roll it up, roll over, take this back to Denver and clean them up. Like, you know, the Lakers, when they did that, like against Memphis last year or whatever, they don't operate that way. They want to finish the series. They want to send a statement. They know LeBron James is on the other team. Anthony Davis is on the other team. They want to make sure that people understand that the sweep was not a fluke, that the Lakers are a good team. They may play them down to the wire, but they're not going to beat them. And so if the Lakers don't approach it like that, like literally, it's cliche to say, but that do or die sort of attitude, we're not going to win any games. And that does require like a championship level of focus to detail and stuff like that. So I don't think they will. another question that came from the Discord that I wanted to ask for us to discuss was what we've alluded to a little bit. You know, we touched on D'Lo, we touched on AD, we touched on Bron a little bit and the importance of the role players and whatnot. This thing about play calling, this has been a very hot topic for the past 24 hours, that the Lakers do not run enough organized offense in the game. And for me personally, like, I understand the idea behind running an organized offense, but I think not the problem, but my only pushback on something like that is our two best players are not organized offense players. We are not talking about Steph Curry running split cuts and coming off of screens to shoot the ball. LeBron is an ISO basketball player, and Anthony Davis is an ISO basketball player. They're not running organized offense. They are going to give me the ball, and I'm going to attack whoever my matchup is, or I'm going to hunt mismatches, or I'm going to run pick and roll to whatever the screen action is to get me the Chicago action. I don't know what it's called. Yep. To get me the opportunity in the post. We do not run organized offense. The Lakers don't, because our best player, or arguably our best player, LeBron James, is one of the highest, if not the highest IQ player in the NBA. He is able to read the floor based on what's happening. So there are no sets called. It's based on feel. So there's been a lot made about the Lakers running a lot of organized offense in the first half and not running a lot in the second half. And there's been a lot been made about that being the reason why we lost the game. So my pushback on that is, I don't think that's the reason why we lost the game. I think the reason we lost the game is they took 20 more shots than we did because we kept turning the ball over and we couldn't rebound on defense. I think those two things are very clear reasons why. If you want to have a conversation of, hey, could our offense be better? Can we generate better shots? Then yes, for sure. Organized offense is probably always better than whatever D'Lo was doing or whatever the Stars were doing. But for the sake of why we lost this game, I don't think the organized offense was the reason we lost this game.
Right.
Where are you at with that idea? Did we run enough sets and plays, particularly in the second half?
Yeah.
I could argue in the first half we didn't run a ton. Like, I know there's a percentage out there, but I felt like a lot of the good spacing that we created, increase, was generating turnovers, playing good defense, grabbing the defensive rebound, getting early leakouts, long outlet passes, stuff like that, that resulted in easy buckets.
Yeah.
Where are you at with that conversation?
Yeah. I think like in a perfect world, would you want every possession be perfectly meticulously mapped out? Sure. That's just not how this works at all. And like, what's the point of running a play, right? Like, what's the end goal of that? Just simplifying it is to create a compromised defense, right? And you can do that in a multitude of ways. And some teams do it with very fancy offense. Quinn Snyder in Utah is like a very, good example of this, where he'd run Will Hardy, even in Utah, right? They run a lot of complex kind of stuff there that they have to do, because when you don't have stars on your team, you have to create advantages when like your guy can't beat their guy one-on-one, right? Mavericks don't run a lot of complicated stuff. They have Luka Doncic and they say, go be brilliant, right? And like, Jason Kidd has ideas and stuff of what he does to kind of map that out. But basically, it's Luka's going to draw two and you guys be ready to shoot, right?
Yeah.
Lakers aren't that extreme anymore because they kind of they pass the rock around to a bunch of different ball handlers and kind of let them create. And most of them, we've talked about this a lot, create for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like D'Lo and Austin. D'Lo has gotten better at this, but D'Lo and Austin are pretty much self-creators. Like they're running actions to get themselves a shot. Right, pretty much. And like there's organized offense that can help that. I don't think that's the reason we lost either. There's plays you can do that. I think Denver's also, you have to remember there's a coaching staff on the other end as well. There's a whole staff on that side that is also there scheming and, you know, adjusting during the game and, you know, and all that. So it's not like there's something that we can run that can directly just, that's like, you plug this in and this is the answer. Like Denver is just too good. They're, you know, very disciplined. They shut off the rim when you're going to the basket. They close out well. They close out controlled, right? Like, there's a lot of tough things. But, again, I think this is a series where, like, you should not have to over, like, complicate things. This should be a – in other series, maybe you have to, right? Against the series, maybe against, like, the Clippers where they can switch a lot of actions. You have to run a lot of diverse stuff to get AD in the post, right? The stuff that you have to kind of do there. This series, I don't think you have advantages in a multitude of different locations that you can attack. Would I like more organized stuff? Yes, I think you can. I think you can name that in different ways, though, right? LeBron coming down and shooting a heat check three. I forgot what quarter he did that in, but like those are shots that you can probably throw away. And like, is that because we didn't run anything? I don't think so. It's just LeBron came down and was like, I'm pulling up from 35 feet, and there's not. I'm sure like Darvin, if you injected truth serum into him, he's like, I didn't like that shot at all, but that's not something that he can really express in a manner that would change things. So that's where I'm at. I don't think it's the reason we lost. Is Darvin better than Coach Malone? Probably not. Like that. There's probably a gap there. I just don't think that's the reason we're losing this game. But where are you at with it?
Yeah, no, I mean that honestly, I agree with everything you said. Like I understand the sentiment of wanting better, more structured offense being run, but dude, like. At some point, I think the fans are looking for a reason to be upset at Ham. And if you had watched that first half, I couldn't find much of a reason to be upset at Darvin Ham for. I thought all the assignments were good, the work that we were trying to do, the things that the lineups that we were running, everything made a ton of sense. Obviously, execution, turnovers, that and you know, hot cold shooting will affect a lot of the end result of that. But I thought for the most part we did a good job. But that second half, like. If there was a way that I could simplify an answer for why we lost that game, I felt like the Lakers were the aggressor in the first half, and then the Nuggets were the aggressor in the second half, and that's why they won the game. Like that's what it felt like to me. It felt like we weren't imposing our will or winning those 50-50 balls or you know just basically trying to be the guys that kept throwing jabs throughout the game and whatnot with the team. So that's the way I see it. I don't think I'm with you. Would I like more structured offense? I think it makes more sense to do it when there's certain players on the floor, when Braun is off the floor. Probably makes a ton more sense to run structured offense. But Raj, okay, if I said that and we turn around and we see them giving AD ISOs against Jokic or ISOs against DeAndre Jordan, is that a bad offensive play if there's no structured offense and all they do is dribble the ball down the floor and then just give the ball to AD to run ISO? Because we did that at the end of the fourth quarter. We didn't run any structured offense. And that game was like a 6-point game with a lot of time left on the clock. So you know, like the percentage at the end of that fourth quarter is not going to look good, but that game was much closer than we thought it would be, you know, considering where the momentum was going. So it's just like, that's the way I see it. Like the idea of structured offense makes a ton of sense. Like if you're doing it for like role players, like for D'Lo, for Austin, for Gabe, mm-hmm. Spencer or Rui, yes, call plays so that we get the ball to the guy that's supposed to go. But if AD and Braun are on the floor and they're like, give me the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's going to happen. Like that's what our two stars like to do. I don't think that's unfair.
Not, and like that's what should happen, right? Like the players, the playoffs devolve into this every year. We forget because there's 82 games as long as hell, which is never changing. I see some people kind of lobbying for that, like the money is never changing, so the games are never changing. But the playoffs kind of devolve into, can you get, you know, 15 to 20 shots? You know, like can you get them up against teams that are very locked in? Defensively, can you get up enough shots? And a lot of those shots are tough, contested. They're, you know, shots where your player has to create one-on-one opposite a good defender. And like, I think, again, you're seeing this around the league. You're seeing 25 point game scorers score 17 to 18 in the playoffs, right? Like, you see this dip in guys who just can't score. And it's not because their offense changed, Binet, right? Yeah. New Orleans' offense did not change. Like, it's just Brandon Ingram's now seeing, like, okay, we can run two down screens for CJ McCollum, who then still can't beat his man because the guy chased hard as hell. So, like, I think AD has to score on Jokic one-on-one. I don't think this is a series where you run from that matchup, at least on the offensive end, right? Like, I think that's a matchup where you want AD going at Jokic in isolation scoring. You want, you know, those guys attacking, and then let D'Lo and Austin filler out of whatever defense that, you know, LeBron and AD compromise in that situation. But can we run more plays? Yes. And like, shout out to the guys who diagram that, you know, and are able to kind of note that for everyone to do. I don't think that's the reason we lost the game. I just think like, these games are gonna, Denver also, right? Denver calls plays, but they have a very set actions they run, and they just play out of that. How you defend that determines how they score. They have no bias on who shoots. It's just whoever's open gets the basketball. I think like, we operate in similar ways, and a lot of teams do this. I mentioned Dallas, Phoenix as well runs a very similar type of just, we're going to run a bunch of handoffs, and like, whoever comes off the screen open kind of shoots. So, we'll see in game two. It's 100% about running sets, but it's about be a little bit more decisive, be a little bit more precise with what you run, like what you're scoring on, who's shooting. We don't have time for these. Let's have D'Lo take four contested jumpers and see if it's going in.
Yeah,
I don't have time for that. I'm sorry. I don't have time for that. D'Lo, spot up. Come off pick and roll if you're open. Put your guy in jail. Try to hit a little floater here and there. But other than that, like, this is star versus star, man. Like, Denver's not effing around. They're not trying to see if Christian Brown has it that night.
Yeah.
They're not messing around. It's KCP, MPJ taking shots. So I think we need to do the same.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way to put it. And the person that asked that question in the Discord, it was Phenomenon. So I just want to shout out that, because I thought that was a great question to bring up to as well. So let's take a look forward a little bit, Raj. Looking at game two, what we'll do is I'll save what your top adjustment would be for the last take of the pod.
Sure.
But I want to get to some news that released today. Shams with the Shams bomb. Our guy Rome from Coach's Den. He's in the Discord, and he left a message. His question was, what are our thoughts? You know, what's our reaction to Christian Wood coming back? And just thoughts about how he would be involved. And, it's been basically announced. Shams' report came out saying that Christian Wood would end up being available for game three as he works his way back from knee surgery. I mean, I'll be very straightforward. I don't know what his conditioning is like. It's always good to have, more length, more size. Lakers could certainly use the size against this Denver team. I don't know how you can insert him in. Maybe he takes those Jackson Hayes minutes with the bench group or for those minutes that's right next to AD when they decide to go with two bigs, which were, I thought, also good minutes too. Like, I thought that was a really smart thing by him saying, hey, Denver's playing multiple non-shooters. I'm playing multiple non-shooters that can wipe out the room completely too as well. I thought that was really smart. Maybe Wood can help us there. But I don't know where his conditioning is at. And I'm also more concerned about where his attention to detail will be if he does get inserted back into the lineup, because, you know, Denver can make you pay if you slip up. But where are you with that announcement?
So during that possession, because I like that you brought up that minute stretch. So AD and Hayes played together. And what we did, Vinay, they went non-Jokic, right? And they had Christian Brown and Peyton Watson and DeAndre Jordan, I think, was on the floor. I forgot.
Yeah, he was on the floor too as well. Yeah.
Because I think Aaron Gordon was in foul trouble. But in any case, we're blitzing Jamal Murray, and that's like Jackson Hayes' strength, right? The guy can kind of show and kind of blitz those ball screens and kind of recover. Christian Wood is not that, even at his healthiest. Like, that's just not the defensive coverage that he plays. And this isn't the point here, but like, I want to know if Christian Wood's agent typed out that tweet, like Shams, like a key boost to the Lakers front court, like, just, and then putting his 7 point and 5 rebound average. I just,
Raj, you and I both know that the Lakers have no clue when their players are going to be available and not available based on the injuries.
We'll do that. That's a summer conversation. But no, yeah, look, it's great. We'll have him. Like, I think he would be useful if he was healthy. It's just,
yeah,
Vinay, Denver's the wrong team to come back to. Like, and I would say this about Gabe Vincent. I would say this about Vanderbilt, anyone, but especially a guy like Christian Wood. Like, I think Denver's a team. Your timing needs to be on point. And forget just the conditioning. You're just your attention to detail is a great way to put it. Just like your timing is off when you come back. There's no,
yeah.
We haven't even heard, like, we haven't even heard if Christian Wood's practicing. I have no idea. Like, there was no news if Christian Wood was in practicing, if he was in contact. I have no idea. So him stepping on the floor game three, especially if we're down 0-2 and that's like must win, your season's over, you lose that game. I'm not for it. I think the risk is too high than the reward. He helps the rebounding, Vinay, for sure. It's just when you're on a ship that's sinking and water's coming in, you close one hole, but then you open like four more to me. And that's what you do with Christian Wood. Like, you help the rebounding. Great. Now you're slow footed. Now he's getting picked on and pick and roll. I don't want to see moon ball threes. I'm sorry. Like, Christian Wood, like, I know his percentages sometimes say otherwise. Christian Wood pick and pop threes hitting the Colorado Mountains before they hit the rim. I just don't want to see those, man. I'm sorry. So, but no, I'm not with it. Where are you? I'm lower on it than I see Lakers Twitter. Some people are kind of pitching him as a savior.
That's crazy. Yeah, I think I think it's really crazy to say a vet minimum guy is going to save your series against the defending champs. I'm with you, dude. Like, I don't. I mean, my main concern is like a basketball concern. Like, I don't even know if he's in condition to play basketball. Like, is he able to get up and down the floor without being super tired? The attention to detail. Like, I'm not so much worried about his shot selection. I mean, we're probably going to get a couple of annoying threes, but I mean, you know, he's a floor spacer for the advantage that he has in theory over Jackson Hayes is that he can space the floor and allow AD to, you know, still have the space that he needs to, operate in the paint unabated. But is that better than what we got defense? Like, I didn't see bad minutes out of Jackson Hayes. Like, I didn't see a bad lineup.
Me either.
We didn't use him like an enormous amount. I thought we used him like I said, you know, I thought Ham pushed the right buttons and used the right lineups, especially in that first half. And so I don't have much to complain about when it comes to that. So I would expect the Lakers to run that same unit again if the same unit against them gets rolled out again. And Denver may adjust that. They may not have like DeAndre and Peyton Watson. Like, if they play two non-shooters, maybe we run that again. That's definitely a possibility. But if it doesn't work or if it gets overwhelmed, maybe they try Christian Wood. But I mean, I'm sure his agent's going to be, you know, elbowing Darvin Ham as he goes through the halls, you know, hoping that Christian gets some minutes. But I feel like we know what we can get out of Jackson. Like, you're going to get a guy who's going to try to defend shots at the rim. He's going to crash the glass. He's going to run hard in transition to try and get you easy dunks, easy layups. He's going to screen. He's going to roll to the rim. We just maybe need more structure offense for when he's on the floor.
I've also seen, like, we have a guy to throw on Jokic. Please.
No. Like, no. Jackson's not guarding yet. Or is
not Jackson.
Christian
Wood. Even if Christian Wood was fully healthy on a full track back, just throwing him first game back on the best player in the world, that's just so out of like tune to me of what would work. So I'm just not with it. I think they're gonna try it. I don't know. We have that room for that margin to kind of see what Christian Wood is. I just don't think we do. Christian Wood's also a guy that just doesn't run baseline to baseline. He's going to want the ball. He's going to want to cook. He's going to want to show his offensive game. He's going to want to score. Like, there's
Christian Wood. Christian Wood being available game three and announcing it before game two, like, assuming his agent's the one that gave that to Shams, like, why? Like, why are you announcing it now? Like, you're not helping us next game, so that doesn't really do anything for us. So
we should
just be excited for you to come back.
But, like, now let's say that he's available – and Darvin just doesn't play him. Like, it looks even worse, right? Like, what's
right? That's actually probably what's going to happen. Darvin probably won't play him because either we're doing well or because it doesn't make sense to play him. And then Lakers Twitter will be like, Darvin Ham should have played Christian Wood because, if he had done that, we would have won the game. Yeah. Because, you know how Twitter works, Raj. If you make the adjustment that Twitter tells you to make, it's going to work. There's no possibility that it can't work. It's going to work. So anyways, we're happy Christian's back. There are some benefits to having him back, but not knowing where he's at in the basketball sense could go both ways. It could be helpful. It could hurt us. Or it could be some middle ground helping and hurting us. So I think we're kind of in the same page when it comes to that. So we're right at close to the end mark for the pod. Game two is coming up. It's coming up tomorrow. We've got a one game sample size of what the new version of the Lakers or the different version of the Lakers looks like. Game one, there was good. There's bad. There was ugly. Darvin Ham has said that he has some other adjustments that he wants to try out. I think he's making that up. I think his adjustment is swapping certain players out. I don't think there's a coverage adjustment that he's trying to do. I think it's going to be like I'm going to play this guy instead of this guy if this guy's not playing well, specifically the D'Lo thing. That's my guess as to what's going to happen. I think my game two adjustment is execute better. Crash the glass. Grab the defensive rebounds. Limit the turnovers. I think the Nuggets had like less than 5 turnovers or some really low number for the entire game as a team.
Murray and Jokic didn't even turn it over,
I believe. That was like just when I talk about execution, I'm not just talking about offense and defense. That's already implied. But the things that we can control to some degree, defensive rebounding, keeping our turnovers down, running good offense, like just not being nonchalant with it. If we can control those things, still execute basketball the way that we did, even with the offensive loss that we had, I think we have a great chance of winning some of these games. Like, again, 11-point loss, but that game was very close. We're just losing these games because of these small margins of error like that we're losing. And it's not just the main stuff. It's not like we went 3 for 25 from three. Like, it's stuff that we can control. Like, don't just throw a pass in traffic when there's 3 Denver Nuggets on the way to the alley-oop, you know what I mean? And risk that pass. Like, just make the safer player take the shot. That's my main game two adjustment. Execute better and keep those turnovers down.
It's funny because like it's kind of what people kill Darvin Ham for, because Darvin Ham will go on like in the post game, and I love that people take every Darvin Ham quote extremely literal. Darvin's like, we just got to be better, and people are like, give me the actual breakdown of what you want in the next game. Shout out to Gray Raj. He said, you know, they had 4 turnovers, which is an extremely low number. Denver also
that's ridiculous.
Even saying that, like, obviously that's a ridiculous number, but Denver also just doesn't turn the ball over much, and I just don't think that's a team you're going to, they're not going to beat themselves. Turnovers are a part of beating yourself. Denver's a team that just doesn't do that. Jokic is very precise, and he plays with a lot of precision on his passes, and his shot pass decisions are maybe best in the league, so you're not going to turn it over. I agree with you, though. Like, it's tough for me to look at everything at this game and not just point to one guy, and it's not fair. Like, it's not the reason. It might be the reason we lost, but it's just a tough, tough kind of thing for me to not point to one guy. It's not just the shot making. It's just, I think you got to be smarter on offense. There's got to be a little bit more detail, a little bit more urgency. There's like 10 coaches there. Someone's got to reel in like, hey, like you're not Damian Lillard. Like, you don't get to come off every ball screen and pull up. Like, you just don't get a chance to do that, especially against this series with KCP flanking you, especially. This is not Malik Beasley guarding you or Damian Lillard for just to continue that. But I just think you got to be more precise. I think like LeBron has to, you know, mismatch Hunt a lot more, make the offense easier, attack in a more controlled manner. So that's what I'll say. The rebounding too, I think Jokic is going to get a few. It's just Jokic's 3 offensive rebounds I can live with. It's Aaron Gordon's 6. That's
brutal.
That murders you. That kills you. And the tough part about it too, Vinay, is that like, if you're going to play off Aaron Gordon, right? Like, because that's our strategy, right? To like kind of let whoever's guarding Aaron Gordon roam. There's got to be like a team-wide where's Aaron Gordon type of thing. Right? Like, it just can't be, oh, he's not my man. So, you know, like, and I see a lot of that. Our guards are very do that a lot, where they just don't box out because they're not guarding a guy who's in the paint. I think that has to be a team-wide focus of like, where's Aaron Gordon? Where's Jokic? I'm putting a body on them every single time. And if you don't want to do that, you don't play. Like, it's just you're going to lose if you're not physical with them. So that's my adjustment. Denver's just a hell of a team to play. You got to play your best. They can play their like second best, third best game and still win. That's just how good they are. So we'll see tomorrow. Those are my adjustments. Just get a win, man. Get the monkey off your back. Like, and then we can just play the series, right? You don't have to hear this, they've lost X amount of times. We don't have to hear this, they blew this many games, or, you know, Jokic is whatever and whatever against AD and stuff like that. Just get the monkey off the back. Let's get this win tomorrow, and then we could have a enjoyable series. But until then, it's going to continue to be this just nasty discourse after every game.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, one of the questions that we did get out of that we did get from Jordan Santiago in the Discord was, you know, did the Lakers have, he kind of asked like this overall question of like, do the Lakers have a team and a coach that can base, like, just overall, can this Lakers team beat Denver? And I think if you ask this, but I don't want to speak for you, Raj, but I was like, they can, but they have to be like the best version of them, of this team that we've seen so far. And that's only right because Denver is an incredible team. So it's not like it's impossible. Is it improbable? Possibly. It's probably a better way of putting it, but you know, it's not impossible, but it does require us to really dig deep as a team, both the coaching staff and the players, in order for us to get there. But we'll find out. We'll see what happens. We like the coverages. We liked the idea that Ham had behind his defensive rotations, the offensive rotations. Need to curb some of those D'Lo minutes back, you know, if he's not doing what we need him to do. Trust some of the guys that we have available. You know, a lot of good stuff that happens. Just need to button up some of the basketball stuff, rebounding and turnovers. So we'll see what happens. Raj, tomorrow Lakers have game two. We'll see what their adjustments are if they come back and, you know, execute the same way that they did or execute better than they did and kind of correct some of those mistakes that they made in game one, which are correctable mistakes with the team. And I'll be very curious to see what adjustments both teams make. We talked about the Lakers, but Denver will make adjustments too as well. So I'll be very curious to see what those adjustments are. And hopefully the Lakers can come back to LA with a tied series 1-1. It will not be easy. But it would be great. It would be a huge boost for, I think, the team's morale if they can steal one in Denver, regardless of what ends up happening in the series. So, as always, we appreciate all the folks that joined us, all 2,300 of you that joined us on Sunday night to discuss the game, discuss game one, and take a preview into game two. As always, if you caught us in the middle of the stream, the you can rewatch it on Twitter, or if you have Apple and Spotify, you can follow us on Lakers. You can follow Lakers Detailed, and I'll have the video up and you can rewatch it at your leisure there. And if nothing else, whether you're listening to this now or you're listening to this later, we appreciate you. And we'll catch you in the next one. Take it easy.